wrong.
I'm gonna stab him.
You're gonna look at me and you're gonna tell me that I'm wrong? Am I wrong?
My favorite.
She wore a crown and she came down in a bubble.
I'm not fighting with you.
Grow up.
I'm not fighting
bro.
With you.
Grow up.
Get it.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another Double D edition of the Creative Differences Podcast. That does not mean titties. It stands for our names, Dallas and Demi. If you are still here past me saying this isn't about titties, thank you for sticking around. I am Dallas, and I have not seen Wicked for good, but I will at some point because my wife wants me to.
And I'm Demi, and I have to give you guys like the stereotypical tagline right now, and so I'm going to. I have been changed for good.
Ah, I've been seeing that.
Yep. Yeah.
Seeing that around.
Yeah. But most importantly, guys, she was a witch.
I love it. Yeah, it's a Double D. Cassie and Gabby are not here. They went to see if they could get dicked down by a tiger.
Oh, God.
It's one of the few things I know about that book, and I wish I didn't.
It's not in the movie. I promise you that.
I would hope not.
It is a PG movie.
Oh, good.
That might disappoint some people, though, based off of one of the songs that is in this particular film, but we'll get to that.
Okay. Interesting. But yeah, before we get to that and everything else, please hit the like, share, and subscribe buttons wherever you're listening. So maybe we can meet Cynthia Erivo and I can finally challenge her to that foot race I've wanted since I watched Widows. I would not win.
You wouldn't. I
would not win.
I've heard so much about her running and you would not win.
Yeah, just seeing that movie, I'm like, I wouldn't win. But it's kind of like the story. Like in Atlanta when Earn races Mike Vick. It's like, you know you're not going to win.
But also like...
You got to try.
She does marathons for fun. And then immediately goes to do a Broadway show. Like, I don't...
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's insane.
It explains why she was running like that in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, also, guys, welcome to another episode of the Creative Differences Podcast, your one-stop shop for movie reviews, Fancast Fridays, Throwback Thursdays, and a number of other pop culture-related items. Today, if you haven't figured it out, we are talking about Wicked for Good, which is one of the most anticipated movies of the year.
Yep. That's our review for today.
It is, and I'm the only one reviewing it, so let's get into it, shall we? Wicked for Good is directed by John M. Chu. It was written by Winnie Holzman and Dana Fox with music by Stephen Schwartz. Y'all know Stephen Schwartz, man. That dude did The Prince of Egypt. He did he did Enchanted. The man got some heat behind him.
Okay.
Also, Winnie Holzman is the original writer of the Broadway play, along with Stephen Schwartz. Stephen Schwartz wrote the music. She wrote the book, which is dialogue and stuff like that. The musical was based very loosely on a book called Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch, which was written by, I know his name, and I can't think of it right now. Gregory Maguire.
Right.
My brain was like, Jerry Maguire. And I was like, no, that's a movie.
Not him.
Wrong thing. Anyway, the movie stars Cynthia Erivo, Ariana Grande Butera, Jonathan Bailey, Ethan Slater, Marissa Bodhi, with Michelle Yeoh and Jeff Goldblum. And the IMDb summary, the second summary, because the first summary was too general for me, but the second summary is, after challenging the wizard's totalitarian regime in Oz, Elphaba must grapple with her identity as the Wicked Witch of the West. Meanwhile, the wizard has given Glinda the title Glinda the Good and a public status as the nation's defender against Elphaba. The two witches must make decisions that seal their fates in this second musical installment. Yep.
All right.
That is the second movie. highly recommend you watch the first one first.
Definitely.
Yeah, because this is actually a movie where I'm like, I don't think you can watch this one without watching the first movie. I don't think anything would make sense.
Yeah, it feels very much like a second part of a story from what I've seen.
Yeah, you wouldn't get the emotional impact. You'd just be like, what is all this? Like these. So one of my favorite things that came from the promo tour was that I think John M. Chu was talking about how the first movie is about choices. So we're watching all these characters make their choices. And the second movie is about consequences. And this movie is all about what happens to these characters as a result of the choices that they made in the first movie. So let's start off. Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande. I'm going to miss y'all, man. I'm gonna miss y'all as Elphaba and Glinda. Thank you. Y'all did y'all thing. I apologize for all the things I said when y'all was casted. I was wrong.
I remember that.
I was wrong. I was so very
wrong. It was
wrong.
Ariana, right?
That it was Ariana. Feeling? Ariana was the one I was concerned about. Cynthia Erivo, I had no qualms about. I was like, Cynthia, go and knock this out the park. But Ariana, I was like, I know you can sing, but, and I know you were acting, but I don't know. I don't know. for Glinda, a character who I love so much, but a character she also loves so much.
Okay. I respect you, you know, standing on business, facing your...
Oh, no. I will admit I was wrong. I was very, very wrong. And I'm so very happy to be wrong. And I've said several times how happy I am that I was wrong. And I feel like I don't really need to talk about the performances too much. You can go back to our review of the first movie. My opinion still stands. Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande are just heaven sent for these roles. They do such phenomenal jobs. And it's the same here. I do remember for the first movie, though, I talked a lot about how Ariana's performance felt like, and not in a bad way, this was a very good thing in my opinion, her performance felt very much like an homage. Her performance could have only come from the fact that there are previous Glindas before her, and that she is honoring those Glindas while also merging that into her own interpretation of who Glinda is. And I think this time around, this is fully just her interpretation of the character.
Okay, cool.
I felt that Cynthia's has always been wholly just Cynthia. And right. just her interpretation of it. And I feel like Ariana came up and stepped up to the plate this time around and did the same thing for this part of, for this half of the story.
So Cynthia wasn't like channeling Idina. Is it Idina Menzel?
Yeah. I don't feel like Cynthia was channeling Idina Menzel. I feel like she might've been playing homages in her own way, but it always felt like this is just Cynthia. Whereas there are times where I could watch the first movie with you and I could go, oh, that vocal arrangement sounds very much like Ariana is channeling Kristen Chenoweth, or, oh, she said this line like Kristen Chenoweth. Like, you can see that Ariana did her due diligence because she loves the show so much that she wanted to give things from the original show that people are attached to and love, that she also was attached to and loves, and that she put those into her performance. Whereas the second half, which is more dramatic and more serious, she was able to be like, this is my interpretation, though. Like, let's be clear here. This is my version of the character. And I think she did a great job. I do, too. I'm really happy with the way that both actresses have portrayed these characters. I really like the way that Ariana portrayed her arc. Cynthia Erivo is such a freaking badass as Elphaba this time around. I mean, I loved her in the first movie, but like, Elphaba was so cool in this movie. And Elphaba's always been my favorite character. So it's just like,
that makes sense.
You're so awesome. You're just so cool, my guy. Like, the aura farming is crazy. I'm also really glad that the movie understands that, like, we're here to see them. We're here to see, like, their relationship.
Okay.
And unfortunately, a lot of part two is you kind of do have to separate them because they're at odds. They're enemies.
Right.
Or, well, propaganda says that they're enemies. But the movie does very much want it. It's like, okay, well, when they're apart, we are still focused on trying to get them back together as soon as possible. Because, yeah, that's what we came for. We came for their relationship. Wicked is a love story. Whether you read Glinda and Elphaba's relationship as just platonic or if you read it as romantic, as I prefer to do. But like,
that sounds about right.
Yeah. Funny enough, I did not read it as romantic until I watched the first movie. For years, I have only been an Elphaba Fiero shipper. And then I saw the movie and I was like, oh, no, that is a thing. And people clearly ship this. I'm with it. I agree with y'all. Y'all saw some stuff. I had to grow into this, but I got there.
Okay.
But regardless of how you interpret their story, it is a love story. It is about these two women who love each other. And that is the through line.
Right.
I don't think I praised the supporting players as much as in the first movie as I'm going to do this time. Jonathan Bailey, like, plays Fiero's growth and the care that he has so well, because Fiero has changed so much since the first movie. First movie, he's very playboy. In this movie, he's not that. He's a much more serious character. He cares a lot more. He's not just dancing through life anymore. He has a serious goal and ambition. Marissa Bodie and Ethan Slater get to, like, their characters take a really big turn this time around. So we get to, like, witness both of those actors, like, their range as actors and what they can do. Although, to be fair, like, for me, I got to see that with Ethan Slater, seeing him on The Boys. But
I was about to say, he's the one who's just on Gen V, right?
Yeah. But or The Boys on Gen V. Yeah, he's so good in Gen V. He was amazing for, like, the short amount of time he was on there. It is a little bit more interesting to see him play a character who was one way in the first film and then see that character evolve into something completely different in the second film.
Okay.
Shout out to the production team. I think it's really obvious that everybody who worked on this movie, like, cared so much for it and, like, really wanted to do right by the story and make something incredible, something beautiful. Every on-screen detail seems, like, very meticulously thought out. The sets, the props, the design, just in general. I love it personally. I've seen people say that they think that the movie's ugly. I'm like, I don't agree with you at all.
Oh. Wow.
Also, somebody please get Paul Tazewell his second Oscar, because my God, the wardrobe be killing. The wardrobe.
Well, hold on. Before we get to wardrobe, I have a question.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I'm just in my mind making this comparison because Pink, but do you think the set design stands up to Barbie? Because when Barbie came out, everybody was like, it looks like a real Barbie house and like world.
Interesting. Actually, you know, no, I do think it probably does better than Barbie. Okay. I don't know. Maybe, I think they're probably up there actually, both together. Because I remember watching the first film and finding out that Shiz is a practical location, like, was insane. And also, like, planting 9 million tulips for Munchkinland, insane, guys.
Jesus.
Y'all was doing work, for real, to make something that was real and tactile and that, like, we could feel like we were in.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. And that's what I mean by, like, you can tell that they all really cared and loved the story so much that they wanted it to be, they wanted it to look and feel as great as they possibly could. But again, that takes us to wardrobe, because, oh my gosh, Paul Tazewell at both movies, every time he has made something for Elphaba that I've been like, I need it. I want it. How can I get it? She has a cardigan in this movie that looks so freaking comfortable.
Nice. We love a comfy cardigan.
She put it on and I was like, oh my gosh, you look like you can drown in that thing and it looks so comfortable. It looks so warm. I want it.
Did this dude win the Oscar for Last Wicked?
He did. He also did the wardrobe for Hamilton, the Broadway show.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So give him the Oscar immediately. Immediately. Host haste. Give it to him now. And Glinda's wedding dress, just chef's kiss. The wardrobe was fantastic, phenomenal. 5 stars. It's so good. The music, which is the main attraction of the movie, obviously it's a musical. I think the first act has better songs than the second act, and I think that's a general consensus among most fans. It's just in general that the first act is better than the second act in basically all regards. But like, there's still some bangers on this soundtrack, yo. I remember when the first movie finished, I was like, okay, I can't wait to hear As Long As You're Mine, No Good Deed, and For Good. And those three are legitimately the best songs on the soundtrack.
Okay.
I love Ariana Grande's version of Thank Goodness Couldn't Be Happier. It's actually probably one of my favorite renditions of that song now.
Okay.
Cynthia's No Good Deed is mind-blowing, show-stopping. The audience clapped when it was over. So good. It might be my favorite rendition of that song I've ever heard. She's so good on that song. And the fact that everybody is singing live as they're filming is insane.
Yeah.
But I feel like you can hear it most on No Good Deed. I'm like, no, that's a live vocal for real. She has a vocal crack during one of the lines, which I'm very certain is a purposeful vocal crack that she does. And I'm like, I don't think you can do that on stage.
Interesting.
Like, I don't think you could get away with it on stage. It's such a good emotional beat for the song. It's so good. No Good Deed is just chef's kiss. Phenomenal. Love it so much. It might be my favorite song of all the Wicked songs, period. I used to listen to it a lot in high school, but I don't know. It's hard for me to tell because I also love The Wizard and I. I obviously love Defying Gravity. And then we have For Good, which is the title song of this movie. And like, yeah, Cynthia and Ariana show us why it is the title song. It's heartbreaking. I cried for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful.
Got them tears at you.
The movie got me a few times. Ain't gonna hold you.
Okay.
Got me a couple times. Song is amazing. One of the sound mixers or something posted up a picture of both of their audio files from recording like part of that song, and they are perfectly aligned.
Oh, wow.
They're perfectly in sync. And like, you would think that like a computer put it together, but no, they did this live.
Wow.
And it's just like, I don't know how you can do that. Like, I don't know how you can perfectly sync up your voice to another person's. But I think that also just speaks to like, first off, how phenomenal they are at singing, but also how great their vocal chemistry is for music. Like, it's legitimately perfect.
Okay.
Which seems impossible.
Yeah, that sounds like a wild thing for two humans to be able to do.
And yet they can. And I just want to say, I think that explains so much about their relationship in press tour and stuff like that. No, guys, I think they really are those people. They really are best friends like that. Like,
I've been hearing about that a lot.
It's great. It's phenomenal. I love them so much for it. Also, I was saying earlier that I cried. There's legitimately a moment in the movie where I sobbed silently in my seat.
Ooh.
There are not many movies that have made me sob. In fact, off the top of my head, there are only two movies that have ever made me sob. One of them is this one. The other one is Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
I was about to say, was it Wakanda Forever?
And that was for very specific circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I know it. It's freaking Wakanda Forever.
It's Wakanda Forever. So I was sitting in the theater and like, I put my hand over my mouth. I was sobbing. I was like, oh my gosh, you guys,
man,
they got me. They got me so, so bad. Just one moment. And it's like, I wasn't anticipating that moment. And I saw it and was like, oh my gosh, why would you do this? Yeah, Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande, because I know that you guys are the ones who came up with this moment through rehearsals. You guys owe me money for therapy, because what the hell? But yeah, me, you and Jesse have actually talked about like our favorite composers in film.
Composers, yeah.
John Powell is one of mine, and I think he does a great job adding to like this, like improving an already very beautiful score that came off of Broadway. Okay. So obviously it's beautiful. I love so much about this movie. There are some flaws, because unfortunately, okay, with Act Two comes some built-in embedded flaws of the story that a lot of Wicked fans will agree exist.
Yeah.
And it's like, unless you're going to deviate away from the story that was told already, you can't really avoid them.
Yeah, so you're gonna bring that with you.
Yeah, like if you're going to be extremely loyal to the play, which I think fans want you to do because we love the play as it is, the baggage has to come with.
Mm-hmm.
The second act of the play is only 45 minutes. This is a 2-hour and 15-minute movie, so obviously they had to like add it.
Yeah,
pretty hardcore. And to be fair, the first movie is longer than the entirety of the whole play.
Oh, wow.
So when you consider that, the first act of the show has got to be like an hour and a half, an hour and 40, something like that.
Right.
So yeah, so like they've bulked up these things so that you could get a better sense of these characters. I think the second act just, and because of that, the second movie kind of suffers from like, it's the pacing isn't as good as the first movie. It's a little bit more high paced. I would have preferred something a little slower, some more character moments that are like that are quiet and built into it. This movie is only 215, 217. First movie is like 240. I personally would not have minded having another 2-hour and a half movie if it helped the pacing a little bit. Also, I liked the first one so much. I don't fucking care how long the movie is. Just give it to me. I'm here for it.
Right.
There is a romantic love story that is not Glinda and Elphaba. Again,
right,
depending on how you read it. I read them as extremely romantic, but a lot of people will just read them as platonic. So there is another romance. There is a subplot romance, which is Elphaba and Fiero. And I think that Elphaba and Fiero get overshadowed by Glinda and Elphaba. And it's because the movie is about Glinda and Elphaba. Like, they are the...
Right.
It's hard not to be overshadowed by the main love story.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's the story. The story is them. And I do feel like once we get to, like, the Elphaba-Fiero stuff, we kind of veer off of what the plot originally was. And I don't think it interweaves itself as smoothly as I would like it to.
Right.
But, like, that's a thing from the play. I love the play.
Yeah, so if you're going to be faithful, you kind of have to, like, you have that with it.
Yeah, it comes with the territory. As long as your mind is their love song, and I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah.
Their version of it is so good. I love it so bad. I also really like the scene. Now, the scene is, it's supposed to be steamy and romantic and, like, yeah, but it's also a PG movie.
Right.
You can only do so much. However, I do appreciate their PG-rated lingerie that they got Elphaba in. Very nice. Love
Interesting.
It. With the cardigan over it. Love it. So good.
PG rated lingerie. It's not a phrase I've heard before.
I'm coining it. Because that's what I felt like when I came out. I was like, she's definitely wearing lingerie, but this is a PG movie. So you can only do so much. Wow. Again, Paul Tazewell, give him that Oscar. But like, you know, they do what they can in a PG setting. Like, they try and make it as like tension filled and like as steamy as you can do in a movie that's meant for like families to be able to all watch.
Right.
But I think they did a good job. I think it's really beautifully shot. Those are my highs. Those are a couple of my lows.
Okay.
I could not have reviewed this after the first viewing of the movie. I had to watch it a second time so I could actually get my thoughts in order. I would have been a worse rambling mess had I come on here after the first after the first viewing. But like, yeah, even like with the critiques that I have, like, I loved this so much. I had such a good time watching it.
Nice.
Wicked is a story that I've waited over a decade to see as a movie.
Right.
I waited over a decade. I've wanted a great Wicked movie since like I was 13 or 14 years old. God, wait, that's like 20 years. Ugh.
Oh boy.
But now I not only have one great Wicked movie, I have two. So,
love that for you.
Yeah. So in the words of Glinda the Good, I couldn't be happier. Somebody make me Elphaba's comfy cardigan. And also, I stand by the fact that Elphaba and Glinda, they are a romantic couple.
Okay.
I stand firmly. I stand on business on that one.
You standing 10 toes on that?
I do, and Ariana Grande would agree with me. So, yeah.
Okay. I was like, obviously, I haven't seen it, but given what I've seen and heard about it and around it, like, this isn't one that I feel like is hard to believe. Like, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, they got an enemies to lovers relationship. I forgot to praise John M. Chu, the director of the movie. He deserves all the freaking praise. He did such a phenomenal job with these two movies. They filmed them, I believe, like at one time, which I think really helped, honestly. But yeah, he did such a phenomenal job. He did amazing. Honestly, I think Cynthia Erivo said it best. There is a clip from an interview from the first film that I absolutely love where she was praising the work that he did. And I'm going to insert it here.
It's really hard to do a movie like this. And I don't know if anyone realizes that thing is massive. Do you know how like this could have been bad. Let's be real. This could have been bad. And we're all sitting watching this because we love it. And do you know why? Because John M. Chu put his stamp on it because he loves it just as much as we do. The reason we're sitting here, the reason we're all here, the reason why we are here is because that man was at the top of the hill, making sure that everyone was safe enough to come up the hill with him. That's why.
Because it's a great quote. All right. But yeah, those are some of my thoughts on Wicked for Good. I'm sure that I have so many more that I would love to talk about, but they would probably be extremely spoilery.
Ah.
You know, when top 10 comes around, maybe I'll just drop them in there. I loved it. So glad to have two amazing Wicked movies. Thank you guys so much. I waited apparently 20 years for this moment, and it did not disappoint.
Love that.
That is my review for Wicked for Good. I hate when I have to do the criticism part of something because I'm like, I don't want to feel like I'm slamming this movie because I'm not. I really love this thing, but like,
yeah.
And I also don't think I could do better, at least not at this point in my career. I definitely couldn't. So
yeah. And you know, you gave it enough praise that it's like,
I love it so much, guys.
Yeah. It's not like they're going to come over across like, oh, she said these things about it.
Yeah.
Like, she clearly loved it and just had these little things to say, which is good for a movie review.
Yeah,
you gotta say both sides.
I think I feel bad about it for this one because like the first movie is like, I'm like, I can't find any flaws. Like, I'm sure they're probably there, but I probably have to nitpick to find them. Whereas this one, I'm like, this one's got some more obvious ones.
Okay, yeah.
But I had a great time. I loved it. I loved it so bad. I've seen it twice so far. I'm planning to see it again eventually. Okay. I told my brother that I would take him to go see it, and because it gives me another excuse to go see it.
Love that.
I went way over time. What you been watching?
I saw that, but I was like, you know, she's vibing, let her rock. You only got one review today. Yeah, we had one review today, so we're bringing back what you're watching, at least for this week. Last night, I went to see a stage play of Paranormal Activity.
Oh?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Very. I saw it at the Amundsen Theater in L.A. One of my boys texted in our group chat and was like, y'all trying to see a Paranormal Activity play? And I was like, hell yeah.
You're like, sure, bro, why not?
Yeah, 100%. I don't watch a lot of plays, but also I don't know of a lot of horror plays. Like, if I'm going to get into the theater, this is going to be the thing to, like, horror is so fascinating on stage. It's such a different experience. Let me give everybody their props. The cast and creative team, it is by Levi Holloway. I believe he wrote it, directed by Felix Barrett, restaged by Levi Holloway. And then it stars Cher Alvarez, Shannon Cochran, Kate Fry, and Patrick Huesinger. We were sitting kind of far back. So in case we were actually looking at understudies and didn't realize it, understudies are Heron Buenas, Caroline Hendricks, and Michael Holding. Sorry if I messed up any names. This was so cool. Like, I watched it and it's one of those things that the more I thought about it after I saw it, the more I liked it. Because I came out like, yeah, I like that. That was cool. As I was watching it, they were doing certain things. My friend, shout out to Mace, he's looking through the program and we're finding information about the dude and it says he's into magic. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
So now you see me shit.
Right. There was somebody listed as, they're credited for Illusions. And I was like, what? Whose name is that? There's Illusions. Chris Fisher. Shout out Chris Fisher. Because they do something, and I'm not going to spoil it because it is hands down my favorite moment of the play. But they do something that I guess in hindsight makes sense that you could pull off on stage because people do magic on stage, obviously. But it's not something I expected to see in a play. It's something you would expect to see in a Paranormal Activity movie. After we're off mic, I'm going to tell you because I have to talk about this. Like, I told Kayla immediately in the car.
You know, I ain't going to see it, so.
You're definitely not going to see it, so I can spoil it for you. But it was so cool. And they do so many cool things. Paranormal Activity is a perfect movie to be adapted for a stage. It takes place primarily in a home. So you set up a set as a house and you can do different things with the rooms to scare the audience. One of my favorite things about watching horror is the audience experience of everyone freaking out together and like the nervous laughter you get when something happens. And we had a fantastic crowd. You know, the theater crowd is the theater crowd. They're very excited.
I love theater people. Like, that's why.
Yeah, they're great.
That's why Wicked was great. My first showing was incredible.
They were the perfect people to watch this with, like a shadow, like they fly a shadow across the stage and everything. And then, like, a blanket gets pulled in a certain direction. I was like, oh, my God. But, yeah, the acting was good, especially both of the main couple were very good. But the guy playing Jimmy, whose name I said earlier, he kind of has to go from, like, happy-go-lucky, goofy husband to just kind of, like, beaten and broken by the stuff that's happening. And he does it so well. I'm like, man, this dude's got to be exhausted. I feel so bad for him.
Probably is.
Yeah. Would recommend, if you're into plays or even just into horror, because I'm not really a play person, but I had a great time.
Yeah, you're not a theater guy.
By the time I got home.
You're not a theater guy.
Yeah, and I'm not opposed to it, but it's one of those things, kind of like musicals in terms of like movies. It's like, I'm not opposed to the medium or genre, but if you're going to get me there, it has to be something I'm interested in being turned into that medium.
It's about horror.
Exactly. Like, you'll watch a horror like Sinners or like something from Jordan Peele because they're telling stories you're interested in. And you'll see it through that. So I'm like, what's the play? Paranormal Activity? Hell yeah. Let's see that. So would recommend. By the time I got home, I was like, I think I might want to do this again. So I might end up doing that. But shout out to
take Jesse with you. Involved. You know he'll love it.
He would love it. I was watching. I was like, oh, Jesse should be here for this.
You guys can have a guy's day.
But to be honest, I was thinking like, oh, Malaya would like this too.
I was also thinking that as soon as I said, I was like, Malaya would want to go see it though. So would DeAndre. Yeah,
so if I go again, Sid would probably go. I'll be rounding up a posse.
So for my what you've been watching, I'm going to talk about The Mighty Nein because I'm obsessed. I love it so bad. I actually did not go do any research on, like, to introduce it. That's my bad. We haven't done this in so long. I don't remember how to do this.
It's been a while.
It's been a minute. That's so weird. It's just me randomly singing, but I guess it works. It reviewed a musical today.
Yeah.
Yeah, The Mighty Nein is an animated show that's executive produced by the team Critical Role, and it stars the team of Critical Role. So Laura Bailey, Taliesin Jaffe, Ashley Johnson, Matthew Mercer, Liam O'Brien, Marisha Ray, Sam Riegel, and Travis Willingham. But we've gotten so many dope guest stars already. Oh my goodness. Mark Strong is playing like what I'm assuming is the big bad of the season. Lucy Liu has played a queen on the show so far. Ming-Na Wen is playing a character. Ali'i Carvalho showed up in the third episode. And I'm like, I love this so much. Alan Cumming is in an episode. Tim McGraw is in an episode. Like, it's
nice. Like, look at everybody.
The cast is so fire. And I just want to know how Critical Role team, how did you do this? How do y'all be stacking up the cast like this? And then also, like, you've got people who already are voiceover, like, greats. So, like, Steve Blum is on the show. Robbie Damon, who plays D&D with them, but is also a voice actor. So great. J.B. Blanc. Just so many great people. The IMDb summary is follows a group of criminals and misfits who are the only ones that can prevent the kingdom from plunging into chaos when an arcane artifact capable of reshaping reality falls into the wrong hands. Yeah, that seems to be the gist of it so far. So I'm a huge fan of The Legend of Vox Machina. I've talked about it many times on this show. I have reviewed all seasons, and I believe it's been on my top 10 favorite shows list every year that it's been out.
Nice.
The Mighty Nein has grasped me so fast. Like, I already, like, I got pulled very fast with The Legend of Vox Machina, but I feel like The Mighty Nein has pulled me even further and even faster. I like the fact that it feels like the shows are made from, like, the same fabric, but they've been cut in different ways. So they have the same type of humor. They have, like, the similar types of drama, but Mighty Nein seems to lean more into the drama than the humor. But when it does have that humor, it's that humor that you already enjoy from Vox Machina.
Right.
I love these characters so far. I've enjoyed the character intro. So I did not mention the fact that Anika Noni Rose is also a guest star on this show. Hey. So they've got three Disney princesses guest starring on this one show. In episode two, there's a moment where like Ming-Na Wen's character is talking, and then we have a scene cut, and immediately after you hear Anika Noni Rose singing, I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. This is amazing.
The Disney kids are living.
It's the best thing ever. But yeah, I've enjoyed like the character intros. The Legend of Vox Machina, when they introduced all their characters, they were already together as a party who had already known each other for a very long time. But for the Mighty Nine, we get to get introduced to them separately first, and then we are going to see them come together as a party to sort out what's going on. The first three episodes are already out. The animation is stunning. I forgot Ivana Sakno is also on the show. She is in Negan 2.0 for you because you...
Yes, Amelia, the other one.
She's the bad robot. She's the other robot. Yeah. And she's also on Ahsoka, which is for me, but she plays a character on the show as well. It's so good. The voice casting is so good. The animation is so good. Their portrayal of magic, the action scenes are really, really good. Like, I highly recommend this if you are a fan of just animated shows. It's very, very well done. So far, we're only three episodes in. Also, the first episode is up for free on YouTube. The rest is on Amazon Prime, but the first episode's up on YouTube. So check it out for free first. And if you like it, continue watching. It's great. But yeah, I've been watching The Mighty Nein and I'm super stoked.
Nice.
Dallas, anything coming up that you are excited about? Something that's released a trailer recently? Anything like that?
I am not good at this section.
Yeah, I think it's because you always forget that we do this now.
Yeah, I always forget we do this section, and then I've gotten away from watching trailers on YouTube. Like, I try to just, like, when I go to... I think because since we stopped doing trailer tracking, I'm like, look, if I want to see the trailer, I'll see it when I'm at the theater.
That's
if not,
fair
I'll try to catch it.
Point. I also have stopped kind of watching trailers. Like, I don't feel, like, the incessant need to, like, oh, I need to watch this trailer.
Right. I'm not like, oh, man, I gotta watch this one. So I'm sure there's something, but for now... I'm just thinking about that play I watched last night.
I love that for you. I will say that I am intrigued by You, Me, and Tuscany, which is the rom-com trailer that came out with Halle Bailey and Reggae John Page.
Okay.
I occasionally like me a good rom-com, and I especially like them when Black people star in them. What can I tell y'all?
I get it.
Also, I'm a huge fan of Halle Bailey. I love her, so I'm really interested. And one of my favorite things is that they use a Janet Jackson song in the trailer, which is so funny to me because Halle Bailey, everybody's been saying that if they ever do a Janet biopic, it's got to be Halle Bailey.
Okay.
So I think that's fun. And then they also released the Hunger Games Sunrise on the Reaping trailer this week.
Right.
I am very much looking forward to that movie. I still need to read the book. I try to read Hunger Games books before the movie comes out so that I'm like, I think it's only because I read the Hunger Games series before that movie series started. So now it's like whenever a new one comes out, I'm like, well, I got to read the book before the next movie comes out. I'm very intrigued to see what this one is about. I'm a fan of Whitney Peake. I really enjoyed her in Hocus Pocus 2. So I'm excited to see her in this movie. McKenna Grace is in this movie. And, you know, we've been making jokes about her stealing roles from child actresses for years. and now she's, you know, a teenager. So it'll be interesting to see her play like a teenage character, not a child. But yeah, I think that Suzanne Collins writes really good books. And I also think it's extraordinary, like the relationship that she has with the producers of these movies, that like once she writes a book, that it's like, cool, guys, the movie will be out in 2 years. See y'all later.
Right.
We always get a book announcement and a movie announcement the day of. They are like,
yeah,
they coincide. Sure. The book will be out next year. The movie will be out the year after. And I think that's actually really cool. I think that's a really nice relationship to have. And I just appreciate the stories that she tells. I appreciate that she tells stories when she feels there's something that she needs to say about society.
Yeah.
I think all of the Hunger Games books have been very socially relevant. And I look forward to seeing what this one's about. This one is also a prequel about Haymitch and about his games. People have been dying to hear about what happened to him, what led to Haymitch being the man that he became for so long, and now we get to know. So again, I need to read the book, but I'm also very excited about the movie. The trailer looked really good. And it's also always the same filmmakers for the most part, so.
Yeah.
It looks like a Hunger Games movie.
Yeah, the dude who did The Long Walk.
Francis Lawrence.
Yes, has been making them, I think. Someone else made the first one.
Gary Ross made the first one, and Francis Lawrence has been making the rest of them ever since.
Yeah, shout out Francis Lawrence. He's good.
Also, shout out to Gary Ross, though, because like when you're making the first movie of, I feel like, these YA adaptations, Like, you really have to, like, hit it hard, and you have to do a really good job in order for it to really take off. You have to make something special about that YA adaptation. And he was doing it at a time when, like, we were at the tail end of Harry Potter. We were at the beginning of Twilight. And Hunger Games is the one that stuck out of, like, all of the millions of them that they were trying to make into movies at that time. And I also really appreciated, like, the very indie look that he gave the first movie in comparison to the rest of this franchise.
Right. I feel that.
It fit for that movie. Similarly to how I really like that Catherine Hardwicke made the first Twilight movie look very indie, probably because they had a very low budget, but
right.
She made it look very indie, and that made it look different. And it drew people in, I feel like, regardless of how you feel about how that movie looks. Because I know that I personally love it. I know that Gabby hates it, but...
Okay.
Different opinions, guys. Speaking of different opinions.
Speaking of different opinions, love the transition. We got some comments. They are all from TikTok. We're going to get right into it. First comment is on our post about The Running Man. It is from Carter. And it says, yes, I love Glenn Powell. He's so fun to watch in every one of his roles.
Agreed.
Which is something I thought more people agreed with. Since we've talked about The Running Man, I've been hearing a lot of other people talk about it. And this opinion is less widely like spread than I thought. Like, most people do like Glenn Powell. He's a very good leading man. But I'm hearing different things about, like, oh, I don't know if this was the one for him. I'm not really da-da-da-da-da. Like, he's not really a good running man. I'm like, I thought he was good.
As two people who know nothing about the source material and have never seen the original movie, he's good for this movie.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have this Arnold Schwarzenegger in their head.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely not an Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like I said last time, he is a Tom Cruise.
Yeah, most people are not going to be an Arnold Schwarzenegger. So it's like taking an 80s Arnold Schwarzenegger movie and adapting it now, or adapting the source material now, it's going to be different.
I thought he did great.
Yeah, I liked it.
Also, I don't know if in the source material, if that character is supposed to be just a dude, but like Arnold Schwarzenegger is never just a dude. And Glenn Powell is... I can believe that he's just a dude.
He's a dude. You know, different times. So we have a really long one. I'm trying to see if I want to save that for the end or if I want to just power through it now.
Is it for about what?
It's about Badlands, Predator Badlands.
Ooh, interesting.
It's so long. I'm just going to, all right, lock in, guys.
Lock in.
So DC Green on TikTok says, I respect Dan for trying new ideas, but I feel like he picked the worst version of every idea he had. Dad giving Deck his blessing and not doing my boy Quay dirty yields the same result. Deck goes to hunt Kallus. Deck's journey is minimally influenced by seeking revenge, mostly influenced by wanting to prove himself. So you keep that in check and story. Then when Theo puts Predator culture on blast, Deck has a reason to defend his culture, and you would agree as an audience because all Preds you see up to this point are chill. Then Deck embraces the wolf / defender persona because he sees the value it adds to his tenets of honor and independence rather than abandoning those altogether. Again, story. I think you meant to write Stinks. You wrote Stonks. I don't know. My Dan ranking are Prey, then Killer of Killers, then Badlands, and then a sad face emoji. DC Green, you are very verbose. And you, I respect it. I read so much that I started to retain more of the beginning of the comment. So like the point of, if the dad gives Deck his blessing and doesn't do the thing that he does, then it yields the same result. I don't know about that because Deck going to hunt the Kallus was, a lot of that was motivated by, Dad has not given me his blessing, and I need to get something that even he's afraid of. So if he just had a nice father, I don't know that Deck is going to try to hunt the Kallus on that planet.
I mean, I think he's still going to, even if he doesn't do the thing that he does, though. But I don't think he has as much urgency if that thing doesn't happen. I don't think it's just about gaining his father's approval and blessing. I think it's also, like, he has to do it in honor of his brother. He has to do it for Quay. Because then there's... What happened to Quay? What was the point if I don't succeed?
Yeah, so like if the thing with Quay doesn't happen, then he definitely, because he made that decision before that happened.
Yep.
But as far as like, if the dad gives him his blessing, I don't think we get, because his main thing is Quay was like, oh yeah, even dad's afraid of that. And he was like, that's the one, I'm getting that. And it's like, if your dad was just like, I love you, son, go have fun on your hunt, then I don't think Deck is going to go like, I need to find the biggest, baddest thing in the world.
Part of me feels like saying I love you, son, is not part of the Predator culture at all. Yaja don't do that. They don't do that.
It can't be.
I don't think they even imply that they love their sons.
No, they don't be hugging their kids.
Mom about to beat the brakes off that boy when she get there.
Oh, yeah. She coming out with the Switch. It's going to be wild. I can't wait to see it. I want Dan Trachtenberg to get a black culture consultant for the mom. I just need that. Yeah. So next comment, we have two comments on something we posted on TikTok 2 years ago from our top five A24 movies.
Fun. I forgot we did that.
Yeah. That's our clip about Morris from America. Manuel Rodriguez and Graham Farrelly both commented a laughing emoji. Two different ones, which I'm choosing to believe these are not bots. These are just two people who commented the same thing at the same time on the same obscure video. And you can't take that away from me.
I have no idea.
All right. Shout out to those guys.
I don't even remember what's in that promo.
I'm pretty sure I was talking about how I could relate to being a young black boy and having a white woman ask me if it's true what they say about black dudes and their dicks.
Wild.
Yeah, it was a wild time. Well, no, yeah. I was going to say it's happened a couple of times. They weren't both white. But in the context of the movie, yes. Anyway, moving on. Our newest reel on The Witcher, Sarah O.
Cool.
She just wrote nah, which is hilarious to me because it's like, I don't know which part of the reel you disagree with. I don't know if you're objecting to The Witcher. I don't know if you're objecting to Liam Hemsworth in the recast. To me, you said a few things in that reel. Were like, yeah, I'm not going to hate on Liam. Like, you're doing a different thing. Freya's good. Anya's good. I like. And she was just like, nah.
I'm not surprised. It's funny because as soon as you said it was for the Witcher wheel, I was like, it's somebody who's hating.
Yeah. So just Sarah finds the new season of The Witcher, it seems objectionable on all counts.
Cool.
But yeah, that's been different opinions.
That's a very different opinion. Good job.
Yeah, shout out to TikTok. I love that we have a few that are short as possible, a laughing emoji, and nah. And then DC Green was like, nah, I'm going to write a video essay in this comment section.
I appreciate the video essay, though. I want to know, like, if we're going to do this, I want to communicate with y'all. Give us your opinions. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah.
That's the point of this.
Give us all of them. And I love that.
Let's talk about these movies and shows.
Yes, everything. So yeah, we did it.
That's it.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for commenting for those people who did that. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. Thank you, Crown Digital, Brandon and Isle. You put us on Spotify. You put us on Apple Podcasts. Give us out there to the people. To me, thank you for editing, putting us on YouTube, repping for the Wicked Winches, which I've decided today is the fandom for Wicked.
Fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know what I said last time.
Winches was the choice. I guess witches is too easy.
It's too easy. It's too on the nose. You know I love my alliteration. So Wicked Winches. We'll workshop it maybe. As always, you can reach us in the comments or hit us on Instagram and Tumblr at Creative Differences Podcast, Facebook.com/Creative Differences PC, or TikTok at Creative Differences Pod. If you want to talk to me about the Paranormal Activity stage play I saw, find me on Instagram or Letterboxd at A King Named Simba.
If you want to argue with me about whether Galinda and Elphaba is a romantic relationship, don't go talk to Ariana Grande about that. She'll talk to you about it because she's on my side. You can deal with her.
Yeah, getting her DMs.
Yeah, talk to her about that. I know she's on my side. I think Cynthia Erivo's on my side too. I saw the movie. I saw the acting choices. Anyway, you guys can find a more articulate version of my Wicked for Good review on Letterboxd at Demi Joua. Joua spelled J-O-I-E. Yeah. Thank you guys for joining us. Tune in next time.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing. We are trying to go see the new Knives Out movie in theaters.
Oh, yeah.
We have not worked out how that's going to work, but I did come up with a new idea that I'm going to actually text you or tell you about after we get off mic.
Okay. Cool. Also, if you want to find Cassie, she's on Blue Sky at Eating Elphaba. And if you want to find Gabby, she's on Blue Sky at Gobbling Galinda.
Ah, yes!
Which I just appreciate the alliterative opportunities I've gotten from this movie.
And again, I will continue to say that I am a lesbian Galinda truther. I said it last time. Yes. I'm going to say it again. Elphaba is definitely bisexual. And you know what? So is Fiero. Okay. In fact, you guys can find out all these characters' different sexualities on Marissa Bodie's TikTok. Marissa Bodie, a.k.a. the woman who plays Nessa Rose. Go ahead and go do that.
Got it. All right. You guys got some homework. It's been different. Bye.
Bye.
All right, Demi. If you could take any movie and turn it into a stage play, what would it be?
Oh, no. I have to be honest. I don't really like that trend that they've been doing lately. They've been doing it with so many. It's crazy.
I looked at a list and I was like, I didn't know that was a thing.
It's become a trend. There's like Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm. Hunger Games has one.
Yeah, we're doing it with TV shows now. Stranger Things.
Things has one.
We did it with Percy Jackson. I was reading about another one this morning. I don't know. If I had to, though, You said a movie?
Yeah.
Maybe Labyrinth? I think that would be interesting.
Oh, interesting.
Or bring back the Hunchback of Notre Dame, the way that they were doing it.
Okay, I can see that.
And bring back Sierra Renee as Esmeralda, because a need, not a want.
Love that for you. I am now just in my horror movie play bag, so.
Insane.
Obvious choice for a musical would be Sinners, because
ooh,
I need those songs again.
That would actually really work too, because it mostly takes place in one location.
I was trying to think of things that takes place mostly in a location. It's like it's mostly in the juke joint. So yeah, if I could see a live performance of Rocky Road to Dublin and all these other songs and see how they would do that like surreal montage, magic what we do scene on the stage, that would look fire. And then if we're not going musical, my other choice would be Insidious, just because it is pretty much a haunted house story. And seeing how much I like the Paranormal Activity one, I'm like, fire. Give me the Darth Maul demon from Insidious on the stage.
What's funny is I feel like my Labyrinth one could be either a musical or it could just be a non-musical.
Yeah.
There's enough songs that you can make a musical out of it, but there's also like not enough songs that you could also remove them. I would prefer the musical version though.
Fair. That makes sense.